Hey, good evening, everybody. Welcome back to our 3 Ideas in 30 Minutes, a special Wednesday night edition. I want to thank our sponsor for this evening, Dr. Michael and Marilyn Fedak, for the many weekly learning opportunities at BRS. We continue to be grateful to the Fedaks for their sponsorship. And as always, our learning is an aliyah for the neshama of Esther Tila Bas Gabriel Pinchas. Okay, here we go. We start tonight with an idea from Rav Henoch, the Rosh Yeshiva of Chofetz Chaim. This is for my son and his yeshiva in honor of TTB as my son graduates. Tremendous hakaras. Oh, we have 3 TTB potential graduates. I won't say graduates yet because you still have a week left. But hakaras hatov to the yeshiva. We'll use an idea from Chidushi Alev Rav Henoch. Beautiful, beautiful idea. Pasuk says, Vayiseldu amishpachosam levesavasam bimispar shemos. Rashi over there, the Ramban over there points out that there was a process for how you had to count people. Now, if you asked me how Moshe Rabbeinu could have counted people, I would have said, okay, what would have been efficient, Moshe would have gone to each tent, one person from each tent would have come out, he would have told Moshe the number of people in the tent, I have 6 children, 7 children, 8 children, whatever the case might be, Moshe Rabbeinu would have kept a tally. But the Ramban comes along and says that's not how it happened. Rather, Moshe Rabbeinu would come to each tent, and each person would come out, Ani Ploni, Nolatati Laploni, Mimishbachas Ploni, Shila Shevet Ruven. Each person would give their name, the name of their father, grandfather, and the tribe that they came from. The Ramban, later on, says something even more astounding. He says, Lotia Omer LaRosh HaMishpacha Kama Mishpatecha. He didn't go to the head of the household and say, how many people are in your house? Kama Bani Mishlecha, or how many children do you have? Ela kulon yehon ovrim lefanecha be'ema uvekavod ve'ata mona osam. Hashem's instructions to Moshe Rabbeinu was that every single person has to come before you. So this was an extremely inefficient system. It would have been much more efficient for the head of the household to have come and to have given Moshe an exact number of how many people in the house. Instead, the Ramban says, based on lemishpachosam, leveisavosam, all these words that are used are to communicate that each and every person would have to come individually before Moshe, and that is how Moshe would count them. The Medrash, on page number 2, continues with the exact same idea. Lo shia sho'elo emor kamal b'mishpatecha. It's not that Moshe went to a father and said, tell me how many people are in your house. Ela hayu ovrim b'chavod k'chayalos shel beis David, which we know is the imagery that's used on Rosh Hashanah, kivnei maron, that we describe v'nesana tokev. Right, so it's as if they're going one by one, they're being counted as if they are in the army. Now, Rav Henoch points out, not only is this an extremely inefficient system, but there's another problem here, which is we're not just talking about some administrator or some front office secretary, whose time is very valuable, but we're talking about here Moshe Rabbeinu. Moshe Rabbeinu, as Rav Henoch points out, was a massive Talmud Chacham. He says, "V'teima madua chayeves haTorah Moshe lipagesh ishit im shishim rivo anashim." Moshe Rabbeinu had to personally meet 600,000 people. Davar adorish man rav. Can you imagine how long that took for Moshe Rabbeinu to do? You know, only a rabbi's child would appreciate this. But you know, Friday night, Rabbi Goldberg and I stand up there on the bima. Okay, so when my wife asks me what time you're going to be home, so I have to factor in. Is it a big Friday night davening, small Friday night davening? Because it takes a while. Now, it's amazing. It's beautiful. You get to shake everyone's hand, but it takes a while. Now, that's to shake about, 100 hands, 200 in the winter, 300. This 600,000 people that Moshe Rabbeinu has to count. So, number one, it takes a long time. But then, says Rav Henoch, Moshe Rabbeinu ayah gadol ador. We're not just talking about anybody. We're talking about Moshe Rabbeinu as the gadol ador. Osek mea boker ad erev mesira sa Torah uvehar batzasa. He's teaching Torah all day long. V'lama yibatel mea vodasa harama. So why did the Torah built in that Moshe Rabbeinu should be bevatel as Torah? V'im kedei ladas es misbaram. If the whole point was for him to know the number, so there was a more efficient way of doing it. That's Rav Henoch's question. It's a great question. Again, let's just review the question. Medrash, the Ramban all say that it wasn't enough for a father to tell or a mother to tell how many people are in the house, but each and every person has to go. 600,000 people have to come before Moshe Rabbeinu. Ask Rav Henoch Leibowitz, I don't understand. That is extremely inefficient. Moshe Rabbeinu was being Marbitz Torah all day long. Can you imagine, like telling Rav Schechter, who's learning Torah all the time, you know, Schechter, we want you to take out the next few days and just stand there and count people and be mevatel your time. Like, what a waste of Rav Schechter's time. There are other people. There are administrators that you can get to count. Why dafka would you ask the Gadol Ador to be able to do that? Says Rav Henoch something so beautiful. He says, "Umashmi u'divrei ha-medrash, she'akadosh baruch hu tziva es Moshe la'asos kein kidei l'chaved es Yisrael." There is nothing that gives someone more kavod than when you look at them individually and you give them the honor of spending a minute with them. V'tzarech lomar she'chashev be'enei ha-kadosh baruch hu l'chaved es Yisrael yoser mikol limud ha-Torah. That it was more important for Hashem to give honor to each and every Jew, more important than any Limud HaTorah. V'zikoi Rav Mashiach Moshe Lassos came bosasman. Wow. 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 Says Rav Henoch, Torah is the most important thing. Talmud Torah, being Marbitz Torah, learning Torah, one of the most important values, Talmud Torah, Keneged Kulam. But says Rav Henoch, there was one thing that was more important than Moshe's Talmud Torah there. And that was showing people respect. Giving people the dignity of spending a minute with them and asking them their names and looking them in the eyes. He says, "Afal pikein, hetiv HaKadosh Baruch Hu shechabed es Yisrael b'kach sheyifagesh im kol echad ba'ofen ishi v'yakir kol echad kishmo v'shem avosav." Can you imagine what that was like? That you would come before Moshe Rabbeinu and Moshe Rabbeinu would look you in the eye, he would say, "Tell me your name. And what's your household? Oh, your grandfather was this. Oh, your grandfather, and they're married to them." Can you imagine how amazing you felt? I was just about to share something, but I can't, because I can't get in touch with trouble with doctors. Yeah, who just rabbied me? Yeah.
If Moshe Rabbeinu spent 10 seconds...
or this is the actuary, okay, yeah?
10 seconds with each person. Did 12 hours a day, 6 days a week, no Shabbos.
Okay.
It would have taken 5.5 months.
5.5 months. Thank you. Thank you, Ethan Krott. In case anyone wondered what Ethan did for a living, there you go.
Not to mention, but
that only magnifies Rav Henoch's question. Magnifies Rav Henoch's question.
Did he spend 5.5 months?
I don't know in reality what happened, but it's a good kasha. It's a good kasha. It reinforces Rav Henoch's question of, isn't that a waste of Moshe Rabbeinu's time? Wasn't there a more efficient way? Now you'll calculate what would happen if only one person from every household did it, with an average of how many children per household, but that I don't want to lose you for the rest of this year. But listen to the point of Rav Henoch. Rav Henoch points out that even though it took Moshe Rabbeinu a lot of time, can you imagine how important every individual felt? Can you imagine how respected they must have felt? Umistaber she'asibel kachi, she'ashba ve'aliyah ruchanis she'ishbia Moshe al-Bnei Yisrael b'kach, she'kavdam ha'isa gedoli yosir me'ashba she'ayim ashbia aleim ilu ha'yim alabdim Torah be'osazman. Understand, guys, this is one of the most powerful two lines that I think we've shared in all of our years here with this Parsha Chabur. Says Rav Henoch that Moshe Rabbeinu gave more kavod to people by showing them respect and that he cares about them more than if he taught them Torah. And he had a greater impact on them by looking them in the eyes and asking them how they're doing more than any Rashi or Tosos that he ever could have shared with them. That is the power of giving someone time and respect. Chevra, we've spoken about this. We live in a deranged society where we have such distractions all around us that we are unable to carry on a conversation with someone or to give someone our full attention, or to give them respect of when you're having a conversation with them, not looking on your phone. Says Rav Henoch, do you know how important it is that when you talk to someone, that you look them in the eye, and they ask them how they're doing, and that you're not distracted while you're talking to them? I remember, again, at the risk of insulting doctors again, this is not an insult on doctors, I promise, I love all doctors. But I remember my father was a physician, and when he was in the hospital, in an administrative capacity, it was right when they were starting to, I guess, type up their notes. And they were bringing computers into the room when they would examine patients. And I remember my father coming home, and he was so worried about it. Because he said, what's it going to do to the patient-doctor relationship if the whole time now, instead of looking at the patient, I'm instead typing on a computer looking away from him? He was so worried about it. And at the time, he fought it in the hospital tooth and nail, and he was able to prevent it. Obviously now, that's long gone. But that just shows that we've lost sight of what it means to have a conversation with someone, to give someone time, to look someone in the eyes, to not be distracted when you are talking to someone. There's no greater disrespect that you could give someone than when you're talking to them, you're also playing on your phone. But he takes it a step further. It's not just about respect. He says the hashba, the influence that he has when he gives them that respect is more important or exceeds the influence that he could have if he taught them Torah. He says, this is Rabbeinu Yonah. I'll let you read this on your own because we're already out of time for this idea. But in Shari Avoda, Rabbeinu Yonah says, the most important idea for a person to have is understanding his own self-worth. If you don't understand how valuable you are, then who cares if you sin? Who cares if you destroy your spirituality? Who cares if you look at that or talk about that or do that? The number one thing Rabbeinu Yonah says is that you understand how important you are. So that's what Moshe Rabbeinu first and foremost understood, that I have to tell every Jew how important they are, that they mean something to me, that they're not just a number, but I'm going to look them in the eye, I'm going to talk to them, and I'm going to play Jewish geography with them. And therefore, he says at the end of page number two, Nimseinu Lamedim, Shein Tafkido Shel Arab Mistakim Bekach Shu Melamed Es Talmidev Es Chachmas HaTorah. He says the job of a rabbi isn't just to teach Torah. Ela Lav Gam Leoded Es Talmidev Uleorer Bahem, I didn't quote the next page. Oh, Oleorer Bahem, Rigshei Chashivas Atzmis. The job of a rabbi is to make people feel important. We don't always get it right, but it's a reminder to us of what all of us should aspire to be in our households, building up our family, in our community, building one another up to help us understand the value that we have and the gifts that we have and the capacity that we have. Says Rav Henoch, that was more important to Hashem than the time that Moshe Rabbeinu lost learning Torah. That is an unbelievable idea from Rav Henoch Leibowitz. Idea number two comes from the Chidushei Arim. The Chidushei Arim asks the following question. So the Psukim tell us that the B'nai Levi are different, that when we come to count everyone else, there's one tribe that is noticeably absent, and that is the tribe of Levi, and that is because the tribe of Levi is going to be designated. They're going to be counted differently with a different age demographic. They're going to have a different service. And as a result of that, so the children of Levi are different. Now, why are the children of Levi different? We know because at the Chet Egel, when everyone else served the idolatry, the children of Levi, all 3,000 of them, they did not, and therefore their reward was that they're going to be counted differently. They're going to have a different job. Ask the Chidushei Arim the obvious question. He says, wait a second. If there were only 3,000 people who served the Egel, then the numbers don't add up. There were more people than just Shevet Levi that didn't serve idolatry. So why was only Shevet Levi rewarded for not serving the idolatry? He says on page number four, Kivadai, Hayab b'nei Yisrael kama shelo chatu be'egel. There were many others that didn't sin at the Chet Egel. Ach lo ben akelios muftach velomar lashem ani. Kishelas Moshe Rabbeinu mi lashem elai. Uvenei Levi hayelahem koach zeh. Says the Chidushei Arim, there's one difference. Everybody else, they sat on the sidelines. They might not have served idolatry, but they didn't do anything about it. They sat on the sidelines and they watched the entire Jewish people sin. There was only one group of people that when Moshe Rabbeinu says, Mi Lashem Elai, he says, I need people to rise up in action and to stop this. The B'nai Levi stood up, they got off the sidelines, and they went into action. And so says the Chidushei Arim, it's not just about who served idolatry and who did not serve idolatry, but rather the B'nai Levi took this one step further. Everyone else might have been Sheval Taseh. They may have stood on the sidelines and done nothing. But if you stand on the sidelines and do nothing when bad things are happening, you know what that makes you? That makes you an accomplice. That makes you complicit. The B'nai Levi were different in that they heard the call of Moshe Rabbeinu and they got off the sidelines and they did something about it. I'll share with you from Rabbi Y.Y. Jacobson what he does with this beautiful Chidushei Arim. If you look on the bottom of page number five, he asks our question. He says, what happens to the B'nai Levi? And he says here on the bottom, he quotes the Chidushei Arim. And then at the bottom, he says, the answer is simple and profoundly relevant. The tribe of Levi did much more than passively not serve the idol. When Moshe, the aftermath of the idol, cried, Mila Shem Elai, the only collective group who responded were the Levim. Go to the top of page number six. Many Jews have refrained from worshiping the golden calf. But when Moshe says, who is for God, The others remained silent. They were ready to do the right thing, but they were not ready to stand up and fight for the right thing. They were ready to silently be good, but they were not ready to take a stand and declare war against bloodshed, idolatry, and adultery. Only those who stood up and protested against the heinous crimes during the Golden Calf debacle were capable of becoming spiritual leaders of the nation, the ambassadors of Hashem in the Beis HaMikdash. This was not a punishment against everyone else. Rather, it was a demonstration of reality. To be a leader, you can't only choose to do the right thing in the privacy of your own domain. You must be ready to stand up and cry out against injustice. You have to be ready to fight publicly for truth. If not, you are incapable of leadership. Then he goes on to say, in Western society, there's a concept called an innocent bystander. In Jewish law, if you stand by, you are not innocent. In American society, you're guilty of doing something. In Jewish law, you are guilty for doing nothing. If you go down a little bit more, the triumph of evil does not occur because of the perpetrators of evil alone. It happens because of the many ordinary men and women who don't care enough or are too afraid to stand up for what is right. For evil to flourish, it only requires good men to do nothing. When ordinary people of good moral standing lose the courage or willingness to protest injustice, morality is dead. When multitudes of people of moral stature do not feel an urgent responsibility to combat the flames of hate and evil burning in their society, evil flourishes. This is true considering every crisis, physical or spiritual, that faces our people and communities today. When good people do not speak out about child abuse, domestic violence, women trapped by ruthless men who refuse to give a divorce, when rabbis avoid taking a strong stand on their followers disobeying instructions of health officials, we allow innocent people to suffer. Leaders must profess the courage to speak up. Silence in the face of a tragedy is a crime all its own. That is the Chiddush Erim. So yes, many people didn't participate in the Chet Egel. They stood on the sidelines. So they didn't do anything wrong, but they missed an important point of what it means to be a Jew. Because to be a Jew isn't just to sit on the sidelines. To be a Jew is to get in the ring and to fight for it. We know this from the story of Esther. Esther was on the sidelines. She was watching. And all of a sudden, when Mordechai comes to her and says that you got to get in the game, that's when Esther realizes that she's got to get off the sidelines. In fact, Rabbi Soloveitchik has a beautiful essay about Esther, the metamorphosis between the first half of the Megillah and the second half of the Megillah. At the beginning of the Megillah, Esther's very passive. It's only after Mordechai gets to her that all of a sudden now she becomes active and she understands her role in the destiny of the Jewish people. We see this by Moshe Rabbeinu. Moshe Rabbeinu, what's the very first description we have of Moshe Rabbeinu? Vayar b'siv lo sam. Moshe Rabbeinu goes out and he sees the suffering of the people. And it's when Moshe decides to do something about it, that's what makes Moshe into a leader. And so many great people see injustice and immorality happening all around them, but it's the people who step forward and do something about it which actually earns their place in history. Think about Pinchas. Think about even great people in our generation like Natan Sharansky or other refuseniks, right? It wasn't just people that sat at their Shabbos table and lamented, oh, what the Russians are doing are horrible. No, it's people who actually did something about it. And of course, this acutely applies to our generation as well. As there is so much injustice around us, there's so much opportunity to combat hate and evil in our world. Just this week, the slanderous blood libel by the New York Times against the state of Israel, which was horribly sourced and just disgusting and disgraceful. And I point the finger at myself, but how many of us sat at our computers and read the article and said, oh, another terrible thing about the New York Times. Maybe we texted a few friends and a few chats and we said, there, the New York Times is at it again. But how many of us actually did something about it? How many of us wrote letters to politicians, to the New York Times, to actually raise our voice? Now, if you don't do it, then we're just as bad as everybody else. We're just as bad as everybody else. There are many, it's very easy to sit around a Shabbos table and complain. It's much harder to do something about it. Whether it's we're talking about, a day school education, whether we're talking about any of the injustices that he speaks about here, like agunas and domestic violence, right? It's very easy to get on your Instagram page and yell at rabbis about agunas. But are you doing anything more than that? Are you getting involved in the cases? Are you working with Rabbanim? These are all the challenges of our communities. So that's why the tribe of Levi is singled out. Not just because they didn't do, but because of what they did do. Many people didn't serve idolatry. They are the only ones who stepped forward and actually did something, and that is what is required of us as Jews. I love his line about there's no such thing as an innocent bystander, because if you stand by, you are not innocent. That is idea number two. So idea number one came from Rav Henoch about the importance of showing each and every person their value and their worth, and we do that by communicating directly with everyone. Idea number two comes from the Chiddush Arim about not standing by, but being willing to stand up and to speak out and to fight for truth and justice, both in our communities and beyond. Idea number three comes from Rav Pinchas Peli. Now, most of us only think of Rav Pinchas Peli on the Yom Narayim, when we learn Rabbi Soloveitchik Sefer Ala Tshuva in English, and he, of course, has the English translation of it. But he also has an essay here about our Parsha. And he writes here the following. Right? We know that the census at the beginning of the Parsha, we spoke about this in between Mincha Maariv a few nights ago. We know that the census at the beginning of the Parsha was because they were preparing for war. Okay, now we discussed that. What war were they preparing for? That if things went as planned without the Meraglim, they were about to go into Eretz Yisrael in just a few weeks, and the Jewish people had to be prepared to wage battle against Canaan. And so they count people preparing for battle. In between Mincha Maariv, we discussed the Ramban. The Ramban says, what are you counting people for? You think the size of the army was going to matter? You think no matter how big the Jewish army was, they had no shot, al pi teva, about beating the Canaan in a war. We knew it was a miracle from Hashem. So if it was a miracle from Hashem, what was the purpose of counting the Jewish people? So the Ramban develops an idea that we ain't somchin al anes. That throughout the Torah, Hashem says, you got to do your part, I'll do my part. You have to at least go through the motions and put in your effort. The Ramban writes that, we referenced also by the Teva, that the Teva was very small. There's no logical way that it would fit everything that was supposed to fit in the Teva. So the Ramban says, if that's the case, why did Noah have to build the Teva? If the whole thing was a miracle, Hashem could have saved everybody's time, and just one day everyone woke up and there was a Teva there. Why did Noah have to spend an entire year building it? So the Ramban says, Ein somchin al neis. We don't rely on overt miracles, but rather we have to kind of couch miracles through natural occurrences. And so Noah had to build the Teva, and we had to count for the army, even though we knew ultimately we would rely on Hashem. But all of that is the backdrop to what Rav Pinchas Peli writes here. And it's an obvious idea, but I think sometimes obvious ideas we take for granted, and when someone points it out to you, you realize the revolutionary idea behind it. You know who was a master at this? Rabbi Sachs. Rabbi Sachs was excellent at taking ideas that we took for granted and showing us historically how they were unique to Judaism, that Judaism was revolutionized a certain idea that we might take for granted in our day and age. And that's exactly what he does here. He points out that if you look throughout history, and I'm not a historian, so I'll trust him, but if you look throughout history, most armies were not necessarily waged, and most battles were not necessarily waged with armies of individuals from the actual kingdom. Who waged wars? So there were two groups, right? Mercenaries or hired fighters. I mean, that's essentially who did it, right? All of a sudden now, the Torah comes along and says that you are not going to rely on mercenaries. You're not going to rely on a paid military force. Rather, there's a revolutionary idea taking place at the beginning of our parsha. And you know what that's called? That's called the people's army. Up until this point, there was no such thing as a people's army. There was no such thing as recruiting people from your own kingdom and having them go wage war on your behalf. Judaism was the first one who created what he calls a people's army. And he writes here, therefore, on the right-hand side, this represents a quite a revolutionary idea from the ancient world. Israel is usually credited with heralding the ideas of liberty, equality, and the like. The fact that Israel is also the originator of a new revolutionary military concept is hardly known. Yet, indeed, this is history's first record of an army that is composed neither of slaves or mercenaries, nor of volunteers or professional soldiers, but rather an entire people. Everyone, without exception, is eligible by age, is to be conscripted. Everyone serves equally, and men of all ranks are provided by the people. Total compulsory conscription is generally considered a recent innovation. It was not found in ancient times in Assyria, Babylon, Egypt, Greece, or Rome. It was unknown during medieval times, when the responsibility to fight for one's country was divided between the commanding noblemen and the commanded masses of slaves. The first instance in which we find an entire people sharing equal responsibility for its military duties was the children of Israel in the desert. Now that in and of itself, I think, is a beautiful idea, and it shows us something that we might have taken for granted. But why do I love this idea so much? Because it's clear that this is not limited just to the war that happened in throughout the Torah. But it is clear that what the Torah is describing as the military service in the Torah is what I'll say is symbolic of our approach to Judaism in general. You see, Judaism in general is unique in the sense that most religions throughout history were limited to the elite few, right? In fact, the greatest opponents to the printing press in the 1600s was the Protestant church. Why? Because they saw it as a threat. They relied on people's ignorance. So it was the upper echelon, it was the elite that had knowledge and had access to knowledge, and everybody else didn't. And that meant that everyone else was not able to be a threat to the church or to, you know, empires. All of a sudden, the printing press came along, and the church was so nervous about it because now it gave power to the masses. Now everyone would be equal and on equal footing. Well, what's interesting is, if you think about it, Torah is the exact antithesis of that. Rabbi Soloveitchik uses a word in Halachic Man that Torah is democratic by nature. And it really is, if you think about it. Torah never differentiated or distinguished between classes of people, between who has access to Torah and who doesn't have access to Torah. In fact, quite the opposite. Torah, as Rabbi Soloveitchik pointed out, was democratic by nature. Any person could have the exact same equal access to Torah. You don't have to be a Kohen, a Levi Yisrael, a Navi, anyone was able to learn the same Torah as everyone else. Everyone was able to serve Hashem in the exact same way as everyone else. And so you didn't have to be all of a sudden in the Beis HaMikdash or in the Mishkan or in a temple to be able to serve God, which meant everyone else was not able to have that relationship with God. Judaism all of a sudden comes along and says, no, everyone is equal. And I think that's symbolized through the army service that we come across in our parsha. The notion of the people's army, the notion that we share equal responsibility is not just in military service, but it's equal responsibility in serving Hashem. Every single one of us has an obligation. You know, we joke around a lot about the Tzivos Hashem or, you know, the army of God. Well, there's a truth to it. It's not just Chabad who came up with this idea that you are in the army of God. Being in the army of God existed long before the Lubavitch Rebbe popularized it, and we're grateful that he did popularize it. But this idea is unique to Judaism. It's the idea that every single one of us has a role. In the same way in an army, you have different fields of the army. You have an army, you have a navy, you have different parts of it, marines, you have different parts. So too in Judaism. You have some people that are the Chesed Jews, some people that are the learning Jews, some people that are the davening Jews, even within Chesed, some people are the Tzedakah, some people the Tomchei Shabbos. But every single one of us has a role. In what was revolutionized back then and has become much more part of our vernacular now is that every single one of us truly is part of God's army. That started Chevra all the way back in Sefer Bamidbar. When Moshe Rabbeinu calls everyone together and it says, all of you have to participate in the army. You can't outsource it. You can't have someone else do it for you. It's not limited to an elite few. But every single person has a role. That applies to us nowadays as well. Every single one of us is on part of the army of Hashem. Every single one of us has a role. In fact, we've quoted before, that's why one of the words used for army is tzava. Tzava is a very strange word. Rav Yaakov C. Mecklenburg points this out. This is a bonus idea. He says, tzava, we refer to every Friday night as the, right, tzvakot. Hashem tzvakot, we should refer to Hashem as tzvakot. We refer to the malachim as tzvakos, right? So what is it? All of a sudden you have an army, the angels are an army of God. What's going on here? So Rav Yaakov C. Mecklenburg points out that a tzava is any time you have different types of things coming together for a unified purpose. That's what an army is. That's what a military is. So when we talk about the angels being the Tzivos Hashem, what it means is that each of them play a different role, but they come together harmoniously serving Hashem. That's what Atzivos Hashem in our term is as well. It means that every one of us has different talents, gifts, resources, abilities that Hashem gave to us, but it means that we're supposed to be in the army of God in a different kind of a way. That was popularized all the way back then by having a troop, people's army. That was the idea of Pinchas Peli. Maybe an idea that we took for granted, but we should understand just how revolutionary that idea was, that Judaism did not outsource it, but Judaism says that every single person has to take responsibility. That is an idea that was revolutionized in our parsha. So we saw 3 ideas in 30 minutes. Idea number one was from Rav Henoch about the importance of giving each person respect and a sense of dignity, more important than Moshe Rabbeinu's Talmud Torah. Such a powerful idea. Idea number two was from the Chidush Yarim in Rav Waiwai about can't be an innocent bystander. If you're a bystander, you're by definition not innocent. To be a Jew means to get off the sidelines and to do something about it. And idea number three from Pinchas Peli, the people's army, the revolutionary idea that in Judaism, it's not just about a select few. It was never just about the Kohen Gadol or the Kohanim or about the knowledgeable class. But in Judaism, it truly is democratic by nature. All of us have an equal role in Hashem's army. With that, I wish everyone a beautiful rest of the week.